MyMac Podcast 118.
The next generation of radio. It's the MyMac.com podcast.
And it feels kind of like coming home again. Chad Perry and myself are alone in the podcast studio. No Guy Searle. Nobody to interview, although we were supposed to interview somebody. What are you doing over there?
I'm messing with this new case that I'm going to be testing out.
It's the signature suit from Casemate. They sent it to me for review. Since I don't have a MacBook,
I'll be testing it and reviewing it and look for a posting on the website.
I won't ask you what you think so far because you've had it for all of 10 minutes. And
yeah.
That's really not enough time to review something.
Yeah.
At least we try to give it a little bit more time than, 10 minutes.
But it does look nice, and it did go in real easy. So
it's purdy.
It is purdy.
I like it because it's purdy.
It has kind of a white leather-like look to match my MacBook.
We have about 2 weeks to go, and Chad and I will be up at the Apple Store in Grand Rapids, Michigan on March 10th, 2007 from, 2 to 3:30?
2 to 3:30, and as a matter of fact, after we finish this podcast, we will be taking some photos of all the lovely prizes that have been donated by all the great folks that are supporting our podcast.
Now, Chad knew about the list of items that we had to give away, and next week's show we're really going to go into detail on everything that we're giving away,
yes,
including some of the stuff that we're going to give away to you, the home audience.
Mm-hmm.
But Chad hadn't seen all the neat stuff that we have to give away, and I brought boxes and boxes over here.
We unloaded a trunk full of goodness from Tim's car.
It's over 20. It's almost $2,600 of free stuff to give away at the podcast, at the Apple Store. But that's not everything we're giving away. So if you add in what we're going to give away to the listeners, who knows how much it's going to be worth.
Oh, yeah.
And it's not really the value that's important. And I know I keep stressing the value because that's really how else do I...
It's hard to convey how much there is until you see the photo.
And you're like, wow. So by the time you guys listen to this, we will have a post up on the feature side that's called, Apple Store Prizes. Sound good?
That'll work.
Yeah, Apple Store Prizes. I haven't posted it yet or even taken the pictures, but it'll be there by the time you hear this. It's Thursday when Chad and I are recording this right now, and you remember when we used to record on Wednesdays?
I do.
What was the original day? Wasn't the original day Thursday?
I thought the original day was Wednesday.
Was it Wednesday? I seem to remember.
I don't remember now.
And it's been so long. Mm-hmm. It's been, we've been doing this podcast for over 2 years now, so it's...
The only way to really know is to go back and listen to the actual podcast.
Heaven forbid.
Listen to one of the original ones and find out what, because that's when we used to date them. So
yes, and he means date as in what date it is. We didn't actually go out with our podcast. I always enjoyed it. I just didn't enjoy it enough to date. I just wanted to be friends. So I was pretty busy this week. On Tuesday, I got a call from an old friend who I haven't really talked to in, probably 8 years or so at least.
Yeah.
And this old friend of mine actually became friends with my ex-wife, and that's kind of why we just kind of didn't hang out.
Right.
But she's a real nice person. I always enjoyed her company, and she calls me up on Tuesday of this week and says, your ex-wife, Becky, told me that you do video work. And I said, sure. She says, well, her husband's grandmother had died, unfortunately. And they wanted to do a funeral video, but the catch was they had to have it done by Thursday before noon because that's when they would be at the funeral home. And I said, sure, I can do it. And I told her the price, and they said, that's not a problem. So on Wednesday this week, yesterday, I went over to her house at about 10 o'clock in the morning, got a box full of pictures, not digital. This is pictures.
Right.
Some of them are Polaroids, which really don't scan very well.
No.
Some of them are professional, seated,
formal studio families,
And most of them are just snapshots. But some of them are very old, from the 50s and the 40s. And there was a few that was taken around the 20s.
Mm.
So, just really neat photos. And the reason I bring this up, I'm trying to explain some of the neat things that you as the listener, can do with your Mac and how easy it really is. So I've got a number of scanners at home, but the only one I have hooked up right now is a Lexmark unit that's an all-in-one. So it takes a normal paper size scan document on top. It's a flatbed scanner. So I bring this stuff home yesterday. Around 11 o'clock, I get to scanning. And I scan in every photo on the Lexmark printer using its software. I'm not scanning, you know, directly to Photoshop or anything. Mm-hmm. And I'm scanning each file so it saves it as a file. With the Lexmark scanner software, you can actually, like, scan it and have it go directly to Photoshop. But to me, it's quicker just to scan it as a file, and then when I have to open those files afterwards to crop out crap,
right?
I just open it in Photoshop then.
Mm-hmm.
So it takes about 2 hours to scan all these photos in. And it's about 80 photos. So figure 40 photos an hour. That's not too bad. Get them all scanned in. I open every one of them in Photoshop, crop out, you know, the bad parts, color correct them if I have to.
Right.
Most of the black and white ones, even the originals, are kind of yellowish. Mm-hmm. After I run it through Photoshop, they're literally black and white, and they look better on my screen than the original picture I'm holding. So I take all those, I drop them into my iPhoto. I don't leave them in my iPhoto for long because they're not my pictures, and I don't want my iPhoto cluttered up with a bunch of pictures that I don't want.
Mm-hmm.
But the reason I did that is so that I can use the Ken Burns effect within iMovie.
iMovie. Yep.
So I open up iMovie. I go to the media tabs in my iPhoto library. I find that set of scans, all those pictures. There's 80 of them. And I bring them in one at a time, and I simply drop them in the timeline.
Right.
One of the things is that I had a problem with, I didn't know how I was going to arrange them, and you can't bring them in from iPhoto directly to your clip plane. In other words, you have to drag them into your timeline at the bottom of the screen. There's no way to bring them into just the clips plane.
Right.
Because you can't see the clip plane if you're in the media section. That's a shortcoming I don't really like. I would rather a tabbed type of interface or a column view or something.
Yeah, something you can flip between and see what you're doing.
Yeah, because if I want to grab this picture and I want the Ken Burns effect, I don't want to have to put it directly into my timeline already. I'm not ready. I'm not at that stage yet. I just want to bring them in and save them as clips. But I couldn't do that, so I brought them all in the time frame, and then I dragged them, all those, up into my clip plane when I was done.
Mm-hmm.
And then I arrange them whatever order I want, put the transitions in, some text opening. I have, you know, in loving memory of, and then the name, and then the dates that she was born and died. And that's pretty much it. That's all I have. I had, what was it, 5 songs altogether that we played through the whole video. And I put a chapter marker at the beginning of each song so you can skip right to the next song.
Mm-hmm.
The videos or the pictures themselves came to about 7.5 minutes total, but they had a certain number of songs that they wanted, so I had to have it repeat, which is simple to do.
Mm-hmm.
So I did all that, export that out to iDVD.
Mm-hmm.
I used iDVD for maybe 10 minutes, putting the menus in.
Yeah.
A nice little... I just used... The one that I used for this particular one is usually used for weddings. It has the kind of the billowing thing going on.
Yeah, right.
But it works really good with this if you drop some kind of mournful music on top of that, you know, and I put her name there, and I got rid of the scene selection, and it had scene selection simply because I had put chapters in.
Mm-hmm.
The chapter markers,
right.
Those would have been scenes that you should have jumped right to. I deleted that out completely, so you can't go to that and pick the song. You just have to go to the next. I just thought it looked cleaner on the interface without scene selection on there, because this is, you know, for a funeral. So the only thing you see is her name and play movie. That's it.
Right.
Couldn't be any more simple. And I finished it last night. I burnt it on an iDVD, made 3 copies, and went back to her house today at, what was it, about 10, a little after 10. Put it in her home DVD player because she was very concerned, if you make this on your computer, will it work on my home DVD player? And that's a valid question. A lot of people worry about that. Well, if I do it on my computer, will it work on any DVD player? The answer is yes, it will. That's kind of the whole point.
Yeah.
So we pop it in her DVD player, and we watched it, and of course she bawled her eyes out, and it came out great.
Mm-hmm.
So 24 hours is all it took to scan in 80 pictures, build it with an iMovie, make the DVD an iDVD, and have it delivered. Less than 24 hours, because mm-hmm. obviously I didn't work all night long at this.
Right.
I went to bed last night at 11 o'clock. So, I mean, so really by... after picking him up and going back home, I probably got started on it about noon yesterday. And I was done. Literally, I was done mm-hmm. with it by the time my wife got home that night around 5:30.
Right.
So realistically, it took me about five and a half hours
that's good.
To make this entire movie. So that's just the what you can do with your Macintosh with the software that's bundled with it. That's the mm-hmm. key. This isn't software that I had to run out and buy.
Right.
This is stuff that's, boom, right there. And if there was music that I need, and there was one song I didn't have that they wanted, I just jumped on the iTunes music store. Yeah, I spent 99 cents, but so what? It was super quick, super easy. Within a minute of realizing I don't have the song, I had that song.
Mm-hmm.
It's just amazing. It really is. And of course, I use the, when I'm building the movie in iMovie, I'm using the iTab music, or the iTunes music in that tab, to mm-hmm. bring my music in. I don't have to search for it. I just type in what I'm looking for. There it is. Insert it at the playhead. Boom. Mm-hmm. Done. It's so simple. I'd like to see a typical PC user do this. Now, I'm not a typical Mac user by any stretch of the imagination.
Right.
I'm probably atypical. And not necessarily in a good way.
Yeah.
But...
No, I think it is a challenge.
You could do it with the machine you have sitting right here, Chad. You have a DVD burner. You have all that software.
Yep.
You could literally do it. Now, it might take you longer than 5 hours because you've never done it.
Correct.
But you could do it,
mm-hmm.
you know? And you probably wouldn't need anybody to show you how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's pretty intuitive.
Yeah.
So that's just a little story I wanted to share, the power of the Mac, that if you're a Mac user and you have a machine that's... you know, even a couple years old, you have that power right there on your desktop or right there on your laptop.
Yep.
You can do it. All you need is a flatbed scanner, and those are dirt cheap nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
Remember when having a printer was kind of an expensive add-on, and having a scanner was, oh my God, that was really expensive.
Hey, I remember when 12-pin printers were the big thing for home users. So
absolutely.
And what was it? The IBM PS2, the little Mac and clone.
Yeah,
I remember. Look at how easy it, because I remember I was working for Office Max at that time, and we had to go to a sales presentation and learn all about how easy it was to hook up the PS2 for home use.
First, pull out your 5 1/4-inch floppy disk.
That's right.
And load the drivers.
Exactly.
In Windows 3.1.
That was back before there was an internet.
Yeah, before there was, well, there was,
well, there was an internet, but back before then,
The only way we would have seen it is if we were working for the State Department or a certain university and nuclear war hit. So.
That's right, and there was no need to have email.
No. It's hard to imagine what it was like before email and before cell phones. You literally had to either be at work by a telephone or at home by a telephone, or you were simply unreachable.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you went... for a drive, you got away from everything.
Well, I think it's difficult to convey that there were computers that didn't have that capability.
Yeah. What did we do with computers before email and before the internet? Really?
There was Karateka. I mean... and Parachute.
Yeah, Parachute. It's And really, that wasn't very long ago. That's the thing. It really wasn't very long ago. So what's it going to be like in another 10 years? Who knows? I was thinking a cool concept would be, not necessarily for a podcast, although it might be fun with a large group of people on a podcast. Maybe 4 or 5 people and everybody can voice their opinions. But how would the computer world and the world in general, what it would be like today... had Apple gone out of business in 1997 when it looked like they really were going to, before mm-hmm. they bought Next Computer, let's just say 95. Apple went out of business in 95, declared bankruptcy, gone, and there is no Macintosh mm-hmm. computers anymore, what the internet would look like, or would we even be using the internet? How big of an impact did Mac computers really have an Apple computer as a company, or Apple Incorporated now,
yeah,
really have on the computing world. Think about it. We wouldn't be listening to digital music. I mean, we would in CDs, but we wouldn't have MP3 players.
Would Microsoft have ever moved beyond Windows 95?
Probably not.
Probably not.
Yeah, you wouldn't see Vista today, and it wouldn't look anything like it does.
No.
How fast would computers be? Maybe they would still be the same speed, because Moore's Law said every 18 months processor speeds are going to double.
Mm-hmm.
But I guarantee you we'd probably still be using CRT monitors that weighed 80 pounds, and the biggest one you can get would be a 17-inch monster.
Well, and that's a good question. What would the impetus have been for Microsoft to keep up with those processor speed changes?
I don't know. It's good questions. I would really think... I think that this maybe is something that we could open up to the listeners.
I think we do open it up to the listeners.
Because it allows you to play what-if games. And I think everybody loves what-if games, you know? So what do you guys think, and gals, because I know women listen to the show as well, what do you guys think the world would be like today? Let's kind of narrow it down to computers, though.
So 1996, Apple files for bankruptcy.
Yep, and nobody buys their assets. They're just gone. So we can't say, well, Microsoft buys the Apple
the operating
assets.
System. Yeah.
Because even if they would have, I mean, we were using Mac OS 7 at the time.
Well, and wasn't Oracle making overtures at that point, too?
Yes.
Yeah.
So, and Sun as well.
And Sun Microsystems, yeah.
So let's just say that Apple is gone. They went away in 1996, never to return. We got no iPods. We've got.
Yeah, I forgot all about that. I just thought of that.
Well, that's what I said. I was talking about the digital music. Would portable digital MP3 players have become as popular as they are without Apple and the iPod? Because remember, the iPod wasn't the first one.
How about QuickTime?
QuickTime, video on the internet. I mean, what kind of video were we getting? We had RealPlayer in 96, but it was horrible. Even then, QuickTime was better for watching video on, and today there's no contest. What would we have? What wouldn't we have? So that's the question. We're going to put it to you guys.
Would Napster still be around today
without
the iTunes Music Store around?
Gotta wonder.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it would have been.
No?
No.
So they would have shut it down?
Yeah, they would have shut it down. Because Apple had nothing to do with that.
True.
It was shut down before Apple started selling music.
So, yeah, you're right.
But we want to open it up to you guys out there. You can either email us what you think would be different and why. You don't even have to tell us why, but just what you think would be different. Mm-hmm. What would we be missing? Would podcasting even exist? Because the first few podcasts were done on Macs.
Right.
I know that for a fact. So, where would we be? How would you be listening to podcasts? How would you subscribe to them? What would you be playing them on?
Would there even be a Zune?
No.
No.
You know, I think the ripple effects of no Apple starting in 1996 is a lot bigger than we're even giving it credit for right now.
Mm-hmm.
We'll open this up to anybody that's listening, including MyMac.com staff members. Don't feel like, oh, I'm a staff member, so he's really not asking for our opinion. Mm-hmm. Yes, we are. And we'd prefer if you would do it in an audio file.
Yeah.
The easiest way to do it is simply to call our telephone number.
1-801-938-5559. On the alternate history without Apple.
Alternate history without Apple. Hopefully we'll hear from at least a couple people.
Yeah.
I mean, I know this is very left brain type of thinking. You know, what?
But
if?
You know what big comic book fans we are.
Yeah.
So.
And video games and
yeah.
Television shows.
And science fiction and alternate fantasy stuff.
We can't
help
it.
Are geeks.
I got a real nice email from Ron Hardy. Did you see that? I don't want to go into the details of, but he was very complimentary of our show. He kind of liked the relaxed nature.
Yeah, and that was very nice of him to send that. Yeah,
it was refreshing. I like to, not that I need a pat on the back or even want a pat on the back, but it's nice to know that someone kind of appreciates the show and the format that we do, as opposed to some of the other types of shows that's more like this. Hey, blah, 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 blah. Then we're going to have a marketing manager. Blah, 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 blah. You know, we're not doing that. We were supposed to have an interview tonight.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know.
Got some lines crossed. We'll follow up and hopefully get him back.
We'll get him back. This is the second time in 3 weeks that our interviewee didn't show up.
Yeah.
And I don't know what's going on. Yeah. Well, the one 3 weeks ago was rescheduled.
So. Yeah, we rescheduled that one. That was a technical issue. That wasn't anything with them.
So. No. And next week, I do not believe we have anybody next week, do we?
No, we don't. So. That'll be the podcast before. No, yes. Not quite yet.
Yes, that will be the last podcast we do before our Apple Store.
So we aren't going to do one on the 7th, then?
No, because that week will be at the Apple Store. Right. Yeah. You know what I have to do? I have to write the questions and answers for the Apple quiz that we're going to do up there. I don't have any questions yet.
Oh, we'll come up with something.
It's easy. Those kind of questions are simple.
For you, they are. Yeah.
Well, for anybody really with an internet connection.
This is true.
Do a search for Apple history or Apple trivia, and it writes itself, really. And it's, I think it's interesting. So
one quick discussion item before we move on. What did you think about Steve Jobs' critique of
the teachers?
The teachers.
Yeah. You want to give a quick catch up? So anybody who didn't read this news story, we found this on MacNN, Mac News Network.
Essentially, Steve Jobs was giving
a technology summit meeting,
and basically said that part of the problem with the educational system is that principals and
administrators
need to be more like CEOs. They need to have the power to fire teachers who are ineffective, and that's why the school systems are failing our kids.
Well, and he puts the blame squarely on the teachers' union.
Unions, yeah.
Michael Dell was at that, and
yes.
He really didn't say anything about anything like that. He played the PC very well.
Yep.
He didn't want to step on anybody's toe. In fact, Steve Jobs, after he said that, he says, I just probably lost us some Mac sales in education. And he may have.
Right.
I don't come from a family of educators, but my wife does.
And I do, too.
And both my mother-in-law and father-in-law were teachers.
Mm-hmm.
Two of my sister-in-laws are teachers. So education has always been very important in my wife's family, and I've been around it long enough to know that how they feel about it,
right,
and how they feel about unions. And I've been a union member myself, all but in different industries. That being said, we have a major problem, at least, and obviously our listeners across the world don't really care about this, but you really should, because education for our children here in America is just as important as education in your country for your children. And we need a more intelligent world, not just a more intelligent country.
Right.
You know, we need to educate all children. But for this conversation, we're focusing on children here in the United States. There are major problems. Our schools are underfunded.
Yep.
But even if we had all the money in the world to throw at the problem, money isn't the problem. I have to actually agree with pretty much everything Steve Jobs said. When a teacher isn't performing well, and parents do not like a certain teacher because they're ineffective, a principal in a school district has almost no power to remove that teacher from that position. So who suffers? The kids suffer. So, you know, I kind of got to agree with Steve Jobs that, but there's got to be a balance in that, I don't think principals should just have carte blanche to go in and fire anybody they want, because, oh, you're not doing a good job, you're fired, go home. But right now they have almost no power. What's a principal good for? They can't fire anybody. They can't hire anybody. I mean, it's all committees and meetings. And so that's where I stand. I think there is a problem. I don't think it's as simple as running it as efficiently as a company, as Steve Jobs suggested. I think the problem's a little bit more complex than that.
Oh, I know it is, but...
But in a lot of respects, I agree with him. And I think it was also very brave of him, as a CEO of a company that sells a lot of hardware to education facilities, to get up there and critique the union of those teachers in such a public forum. Was either very stupid or very brave. So what did you think, though?
Well, I think it's a pat response. I think you'll hear that from a lot of people. I mean, John Engler, our former governor here in Michigan, was very adamant about the union issue, too, and did several times try to do things to break the teachers' union or the NEA, at least in Michigan, the MEA in this case.
Well, Arnold Schwarzenegger also seemed to be very anti-teachers union in California. I remember hearing nationally about that, you know, he wanted to get rid of some of these unions because they were simply too powerful. I think when a union becomes too powerful, that I don't think it really serves its union members as well, because it becomes an entity unto itself that only looks after itself.
Right.
And that's a problem. You know, the
see, United but my Auto issue Workers is that you can sit there and say the unions are too powerful, but the problem is the individual teacher isn't anymore. If you look at the authority that a teacher holds in the classroom, it's almost nil.
That's true. That's why I said it's a balancing act. It's not just, if you're going to run it like a company, then you have to let the teachers be middle management. And middle management should have authority to take disciplinary action.
I agree.
Or make suggestions that are more than just suggestions, that this has to, you know. If they have a problem child that needs special attention, that the teacher should be able to address that without going through four levels of outside psychiatrists to get permission to do that.
And how do we handle litigation issues for public schools then?
Yeah, exactly.
Because that's the other issue, is that, you know, even though you can take disciplinary action against a kid.
You know, when I was in school, and this wasn't very long ago, I'm 37 years old, so when I was in elementary school, you know, that was 25 years ago. I had this one teacher, Mr. Shalaki, that if you acted up in school, he would come and he would pinch you right between your neck and your shoulder.
Yeah.
In a certain spot. And it basically
made you by your deltoid muscle or trapezius. Yeah.
And your entire body would basically wrap itself around his thumb and forefinger. And you could be talking like this and you're frozen. You can't do anything. And he would literally pick you up like that, march you into the hall, set you into the chair out there, and let go. And you could barely breathe. It hurt so bad. But as soon as he let go, it stopped hurting. It didn't do any permanent damage. Right. But you knew damn well that if he did that to you, you were probably screwing around. Now, my parents knew that he did that. They never went up to the school and demanded he get fired or how dare him touch my children. But it's different today.
Oh, yeah.
Why? Do you think it's different because of litigation? Or do you think it's different because the teachers' unions are so powerful? Or there's no money in the school district, so there's a lot more failure, and those people are getting more frustrated with the system?
I think it's a little bit of, you know, and it's going to vary from district to district. I mean, you have districts that are very successful. You have ones that aren't.
Yeah.
Part of it is a level of discipline, I think, that's exercised in the home, too.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, there's things that you and I just wouldn't imagine doing as kids.
Right.
That kids nowadays don't have a problem doing.
Yes. But by the same token, we had some freedoms as kids that they don't have nowadays.
Right.
So, you know, taking an iPod to school is a no-no in most school districts. Taking a cell phone into school is a no-no in some school districts. You know, technology makes things different.
Yeah.
You could write a blog post and your school could be shut down. And you can get arrested for what you said in a blog post. I mean, it's a different world that we live in today.
Yeah.
And you can look back at some milestone events that probably hearken this change, Columbine and, and situations like that. But, you know, there was always violence in school. There was always problems. But when it comes to education, I have to take almost a conservative viewpoint and say, let's kind of go back to the way things were, because it worked.
Yeah, it did work. And for me, it's just the standards are so different. I mean, for me, at my school, I grew up in a country school, and kids brought guns to school.
Wow.
They would bring their shotguns to show off. Of course, they'd be in a gun case and they'd get permission, but they'd say, look at my new gun. Isn't this great?
Did you get paddles at school? Did they paddle kids?
Oh, in elementary they did, sure.
Yeah, they did at mine. I remember they had that paddle and it had the holes drilled in it.
Yep.
Oh, you don't want to go down there. I remember John Herta and I was wrestling around one day. We weren't even fighting. We were just screwing around. And one of the teachers caught us screwing around and... it was probably me, but it might have been John said something nasty to the teacher, so we had to go down to the principal's office. We knew it was coming. The problem was it had been, it was half snow, half drizzle. The snow was melting, so we were soaking wet. You see where I'm going with this?
Oh,
we've got soaking wet pants, and we're going to have to get that paddle. Oh, lordy, lordy.
Oh, man.
And we probably deserved it, yeah. I'll be honest. But, that being said, I don't want somebody hitting my kids today.
Mm-hmm.
I've got three girls, and if I find out somebody at my daughter's school spanked her, I'm going up to the school, and I'm giving them a different kind of spanking.
Mm-hmm.
So, see what I mean? It's different.
Yeah.
But it's just a different world we live in. We've spent way too much time on this subject, probably, for the MyMac.com podcast.
Yeah.
But that's what people like. We're different. Cisco and Apple settled their lawsuit.
Really?
Yeah, so I guess they can both use the iPhone trademark worldwide.
Yeah, but it's not going to be the same piece of equipment.
Don't you think Cisco is the more recognizable brand iPhone? I mean, when you think of
people
the
have
iPhone,
been talking about the Cisco iPhone for the last year.
It's been in all the rumor sites, Cisco's coming out with an iPhone.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they actually came out with an iPhone, it was in every single newspaper. Oh, wait a minute. I've got that backwards, don't I?
Oh, yeah. It closed down CES practically.
Good job there, Cisco. Good job. Congratulations. So that's going to be, I think, it for Chad and I this week. We need to go down and take some pictures of all the cool goodies. Now, remember, we are accepting contest entries for the contest that we're going to do at the Apple Store.
Mm-hmm.
All you have to do is send an email to...
Contest@gmail.com.
It comes to me anyway, so it really don't make a difference.
But contest@gmail.com.
No!
What?
It's contest@mymac.com.
Contest@mymac.com?
Yes.
Don't we use the Gmail anymore?
Well, yeah, that's mymacpodcast@gmail.com.
Contest@mymac.com. Please include your name, address, and phone number so we can be sure to get you your prize if you're a winner.
Hopefully some of you listening can make it up to Grand Rapids on March 10th. It's going to be a really fun show. We got a lot of stuff to give away. We would love to meet as many people as we can. If you were up there the last time we did the podcast, back in September, it's going to be a little bit different this time. We're a little bit more prepared. We're not going to have to yell. We're going to be hooked up to a speaker system so people can actually hear us.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to have a wired mic so we can go out to the audience and talk to people and get them on the show without them having to come up to us.
You're not going to have to crane your neck by looking at one of the co-hosts all the time.
No, that's really tall. Guy, by the way, couldn't make it tonight, obviously.
Yeah.
So that is Chad and my segment. Coming up next, we're going to have John Nemirovsky, Robert Hazelrig, and
David Cohen.
I already got... David's... No, I don't have David yet. Maybe David's not coming up. I don't have a segment yet. But
and be sure to check out the website. There's some real great content posted up there right now.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff up there right
We've
now.
We've got an article, combined article with John Nemo and David Cohen.
Yep.
Is the Pro in MacBook Pro really worth the price? It's a great discussion.
That's good points both ways. John Nemirovsky basically doesn't think it's worth an extra $800 to get the Pro version.
No, he does think it is. David doesn't think
it is. Oh, I'm sorry. Correct. And David really doesn't think it's worth the extra money. Well, you've got a MacBook, and I've got a MacBook Pro. Mm-hmm. And honestly, for everything I do, I could probably use your machine just as easily.
Yeah.
The only difference really is screen size.
The screen size, but I think David and John, both bring up good points as far as graphics capability. You will see some drag on the MacBook if you're doing any heavy graphics work.
Absolutely. So it's worth checking out. It's called $800 for three letters. Is the Pro and MacBook Pro really worth the price? Mm-hmm. It was posted on Valentine's Day, the 20th of February.
Yep.
And I'm actually a day behind on posting.
Mm.
So by the time people listen to this, there'll be a couple new things up there, including... I'm going to get it wrong. I can't think. I've got an actual review from John Farr.
Oh, cool.
And I want to say it's a Dreamweaver, but that doesn't sound right. Maybe it is Dreamweaver.
We'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, it's something like that. I'm punchy and tired, so I was up all night long doing a video.
And we've got Maxpiration 72, the download drawer, another mixed bag of downloads from Don Yankelo. Gives you a lot of great freebie applications you can download and use on your Mac.
If you go up to mymac.com, obviously we have advertisements, and we have advertisement at the top of the page and going down the right-hand side of the page.
Mm-hmm.
I have got some emails from people saying what happened to Small Dog.
Yep.
Small Dog decided to advertise elsewhere for a while.
Mm-hmm.
We've been with Small Dog for 9 years, so... We're not necessarily parting ways completely, but no. For a while they're not sponsoring the website or the podcast, and mm-hmm. that's fine. It kind of opens it up for us to try to find some new sponsors. A lot of people are always sure. hesitant because we push Small Dog very hard because they're such correct. A good company. Mm-hmm. This gives us an opportunity to maybe get some other companies come in mm-hmm. without having to compete with our other yep. advertisers. So I think it'll work out. But anyways, what I was going for, though, is on the right-hand side, we have those square ads going down the page. Mm-hmm. Towards the, right between all the Google ads, there's a little widget, and it's called Free Widget, MyMac.com Podcast. Actually, just MyMac Podcast.
Yep.
If you download that, you can actually install a widget that will play the MyMac.com Podcast within Dashboard. Mm-hmm. I made it with that Dash Code software coming up in 10.5.
Yeah.
Apple released a beta, so I used it. Mm-hmm. It was the simplest thing I've ever done.
Oh, it's cool.
Within 5 minutes, I had this widget running, and... Mm-hmm. It's pretty neat. So anybody can download it if you want to. Go for it. It's free. And maybe you can click some of those links and buy the new Harry Potter book so I can get paid. We got a link to it.
That's true.
My wife said, we're getting the Harry Potter book, right? And I said, well, of course. She goes, do I get to read it first? I said, maybe we'll have to buy two copies. I'm not letting her read that first. Give me a break. It'll drive me crazy. So anyways, that's the show for Chad and I. Stick around for the rest of the show. And on a final note, we will be having some enhanced shows in the future. A couple of people wrote in just last week after the Adam Christensen mm-hmm. interview saying, hey, are you guys going to do an enhanced show too? So we'll have chapter markers and you can jump right in.
Right.
Yeah, I think that's coming.
Okay.
So we will see everybody next week and in 2 weeks at the Apple Store in Grand Rapids.
See ya.
Good evening. This is Not Mac News with your host, Guy Searle. Send any comments to notmacnews@gmail.com. Dateline, New York, New York. Carl Kruger, a New York State senator, will soon introduce legislation banning crossing the street while using an iPod. According to Senator Kruger, at least 3 people have died while crossing the street and having the device in their possession. Even before the bill is introduced, the New York City Sanitation Department is complaining about the passage of such legislation since having all those iPods thrown away in trash cans by pedestrians before crossing the street will induce an unnecessary burden on their employees. The New York City Police Department has also weighed in, saying that thousands of people who refuse to throw away their iPods will be forced to walk around the block in circles and never be able to reach their destinations. The iPod isn't being singled out. Cell phones, BlackBerry portable communication devices, small video game consoles, and for some odd reason, suppositories, are also sought to be banned by Senator Kruger for the street crossing public. In related news, Apple will open approximately 10,000 new mini iPod stores throughout the city to sell the popular music device again to those that just threw them away. Not Mac News. We always cross against the green. I'm Guy Searle, and I wish you a good night.
Hello, Robert Hazelrick here. Today I would like to talk to you about a couple of items. First one up is EarBuddy from a company called SendStation. EarBuddy is a very compact case for your earbuds. EarBuddy retails for $15 and it has a little keychain on the top of it, which makes it extremely handy. I've been using mine on a regular basis now to keep my headphones from getting tangled up in my backpack. I've used it to store just about every kind of earbud that I own. I've got a pair of Sonys, I've got a pair of Vmotas, and I've also got the standard Apple earbuds, and they all fit in there nicely. The earbuds stick into the center portion of the little device, and then you just wrap your wires around the outside, and then it has a little lid with a zipper compartment. You zipped it up, and it is a convenient way to keep your earbuds from getting tangled. Next up is Tech Tool Pro. Now, Tech Tool Pro is not something new, but it has been updated. It is now universal binary, and it's in version 4.5.2. And although it's not the most significant of upgrades, it is a lot faster than it used to be. If you're not familiar with Tech Tool Pro, it is one of the most comprehensive hardware checking utilities that you could own for your Macintosh. As in most disk utility software applications, it does diagnose your files, your volumes, and your hard drives, but it also adds a diagnosis feature that checks your hardware. It'll do a system cache check. It'll check your clocks, your FireWire ports, your main memory, your mathematics, your processor, and even your USB and video memory. More than that, it also allows you to do disk maintenance on your directories as well as disk optimization. Some of the other features that I really like about TechTool is the safety features. If you go into the TechTool Pro menu bar, you'll see that there is a little safety belt on one of the hard drive icons that you can click on. And that actually brings you to an area in TechTool Pro that allows you to set up alerts. You can actually schedule TechTool Pro to run its tests, and if there are any issues, the application will actually alert you to any diagnosis failures. Unfortunately for me, I found that the alert system works very well when it alerted me to a smart failure on one of the hard drives in my G5. Luckily, and thanks to TechTool Pro, I was able to get a new drive, replace it before the drive that was giving me the alert had failed completely. Another great feature about TechTool Pro is the eDrive. It allows you to create an emergency startup partition that if your system does fail, you can always boot from this partition and run your repairs without having to boot from a bootable CD or DVD. TechTool Pro retails for about $100, and you can find them at micromat.com. Well, that's it for me this week. This has been Robert Hazelrig. Thanks for listening.
Delighted to have author Andrew Shallett with us on the line. He's the co-author of Do-It-Yourself Mac Projects, along with Jolie Ballou, who we interviewed recently here on the MyMac.com Book Bites Live podcast, and the sole author of Mac Design Out of the Box, which is published by Inside Mac Press. Nice to meet you, Andrew.
Nice to meet you, John.
We are talking to a real honest-to-goodness designer, and let's begin with Mac Design Out of the Box. What you do in this book is very impressive. You use the basic tools that come with every new Macintosh to help people go from absolute beginner to some degree of accomplishment as a designer. What got you started in creating this book from scratch?
Well, I've been a designer for quite a few years, less than two decades probably, but more than one. And over the years, because I've had the Mac since 1985, over the years, I've always been asked by people to help them out of tight spots, essentially. And I'm always going to find them a way that is sort of guerrilla design. A lot of people call me up with a problem, and I'll say, "Well, try using QuickTime for this," or something like that. And as the years went by, and as I accumulated a lot of these tricks, I guess you could call them tricks, but also this whole methodology, I started to realize that this is actually a good subject for a book. So
I did. And that. One of my favorite things is that you spend a lot of time helping people use AppleWorks. And it's interesting because at one point you say how AppleWorks is, what do you call it, the little engine that mostly can, and Pages, which is part of the iWorks suite, is the little engine that can do too much. Can you give us a brief paragraph on the strengths and weaknesses of AppleWorks and Pages for design out of the box?
Sure. Well, AppleWorks has been kicking around for a number of years, and you can still get it, although I don't think it's actually included on a lot of the new Intel Macs. But the idea of AppleWorks is that it was a sort of a do-all, can-do-all application. You had drawing, you had database, you had word processing, all these different things, all the basic things that you needed to do your work on a Mac without having to spend an extra penny. And that is essentially the spirit of my book, the idea that you just have whatever comes out of the box, nothing more. But when I was publishing this, when I was writing this book, they asked me, and it was actually, it's Inside Mac Press is the imprint, but actually we're with Peach Pit.
Okay.
Peach Pit wanted us to add a little bit more to it and say, well, for a few bucks more, you should get Pages, which is part of the iWorks suite. and which comes along with Keynote. So Pages, on the other hand, so I called AppleWorks the little engine we could, essentially, because you can do so many things with it. Very basic. It's not great for doing high-end design. It doesn't do well with raster images, but for vector and for basic forms, it's fantastic. So that being said, Pages, on the other hand, is a sort of a prepackaged, can-do design layout application, not just a word processor, but actually a word processor and a design and layout app, and you can make PDFs with it as you can with any application on Mac. But the idea is that it's a little bit more than what I thought the people who are using AppleWorks could use. It'll get you, I guess it'll get you to the point where you know enough to be dangerous. And that's what I meant by it. You can do too much, because it really has beautiful design, but you might find yourself overreaching, and at that point you might have to jump in and buy something like InDesign and Illustrator,
because that's really, spare us from that for the time being, please.
That's what I tried to do with all of my with my ideas in this book.
Well, in the themes that you develop in this book, Mac Design Out of the Box by Andrew Shallet. Oh, by the way, let's talk about the price. It's $30 US, $42 Canadian, and £22 in the United Kingdom.
I'm sure you can get that for a lot cheaper nowadays too.
Okay, well, let's say that's our top manufacturer's suggested retail price.
My best royalty price, yes.
Good. Tell us briefly what you mean by type as artwork or words as pictures.
Well, I have a basic tenet. When I design, I approach design as language. My background is design and literature. I have some degrees in literature, and I'm a writer, so I'm a writer and a designer. But when I find that when I'm writing, I look at type. For instance, when I put a proposal together for something, I use Courier. I don't use fancy type because I don't care about the look of my page so much as I do about the content of it. So I'm using the content of the words, the meaning of the words are what I'm emphasizing. Whereas when I'm designing, I'm distancing myself from the meaning of the words, and I'm using the beauty of the typography. And I'm a big believer in typography standing on its own. Typography is another artist. It's not really a fine art, but it is an art. And designing of letters and kerning pairs and all these things are very important. And so you try to keep pristine the look of type. So what I try to do is get you to see the two different ways. It's sort of the way that if you look at one of those trick images where if you squint your eyes one way, you'll see a picture and then you twist it like an Escher drawing or something. It's that sort of thing. It's that sort of facility that if you can divorce yourself from the meaning of type while you're designing it, and then when you're looking at the meaning of it, don't worry about the way it looks. Try to get the meaning, the content of the type together. And so that's the dichotomy that I'm trying to talk about in the book. But
well, you cover that very well.
Thank you.
And the production values of this book are really wonderful. The type itself and the screenshots, in other words, the physical book, which is something I want to applaud you and your publisher and your editor on. I know you were involved in that.
Yes.
You did a very nice job on that.
Thank you.
Well, we've been talking primarily about print, and when most people think about design, they think about print and the printed page, a piece of paper. But now Mac Design Out of the Box also deals with the web. But you say the first thing we have to be aware of, the first cold bit of ice down our back, are compromises. Why are there so many compromises when we go from print to the internet?
Well, design is a set of compromises to begin with. The idea that you have your own idea in mind and it's an ideal and you don't necessarily find the right paper for it, that's a compromise. So you have to find something else. Or the inks. Inks themselves don't always cover the colors that you want to put onto something. It's the same sort of thing. The web is a little bit further along because, first off, you really don't have as much control over typography. You do not have control when you're working on the web. You don't have control over how people are viewing your work. To a great extent, you don't. You have to compromise it quite a bit. As I said, in print, you know what the paper is going to be. You know what the delivery process of your design is going to be. But on the web, you have the Mac, you have Safari, you have Firefox, you have Internet Explorer on PCs. So you don't know. You don't know if their colors are going to be right on their monitor when they're watching your thing. So there are so many things that you have to work backward from and get a sort of a best best worst case scenario, and that's what you design toward. That's a compromise. The set of compromises. You nowadays with cascading style sheets and things of that nature, you can pare down those compromises. But the whole idea of a cascading style sheet, which I'm hoping that some of your listeners understand, they've run across it. If you've done any design, you know about cascading style sheets. Blogs are made that way. Cascading style sheets, the cascading part of it is essentially a stairway where you say, well, I'm going to start out with this typeface. It happens to be a serif face, but if that one's not available, then we cascade down a little bit further and we say, well, we'll try this set of serif faces, and if they're not available, we'll just try this one, Times Roman, instead. And so you're cascading down, and that's essentially, cascading style sheets are a set of compromises.
And that applies throughout all of the design criteria that you use in this book, Mac Design Out of the Box.
Yes.
But you don't just use web and you don't just use print. You also involve iPhoto and iMovie in this terrific book. And tell us briefly what it means to storyboard with iPhoto and why the storyboard is so important when you create your home iMovie.
Okay, well, if I can just step back one sec and take a look. The book is broken up into three basic parts, which is print design, web design, and video. And the idea is that the Mac was made to do all of these things, and so I want you to do it, but without spending any extra money on it. So the third part, which is video, we're talking about putting together a video in iDVD and iMovie, but before we even get there, I want you to use iPhoto, because iPhoto uses stills, and if you've ever seen when they do making of films, for instance, they'll always show you the storyboards where the director and the artists or the art directors sketch out every scene before they actually film them. And in a sense, that's what iPhoto lets you do, because it lets you do these beautiful little quick slideshows, and you can add soundtracks to them. But the idea is that you can quickly change your succession of images so that they make sense one way, they don't make sense another way, and you can flip them around very quickly and very easily. And with iPhoto, you can change them back and forth, and you get a good sense of where you want to go. And that really is what's called storyboarding in filmmaking. So iPhoto is a great thing because it also makes a QuickTime movie of it that you can then even bring in onto a DVD. Later on.
Right. We've done that.
Yeah.
And that brings us to the other book that you're a co-author on, Do-It-Yourself Mac Projects, 24 Cool Things You Didn't Know You Could Do. And as we know from our interview with co-author Jolie Ballou, this is published by McGraw-Hill. The cost is $25 U.S., £15 U.K., and $30 in Canadian. And just briefly, before we wrap it up, Andrew, what's one or two important projects that you really get a buzz from this book, Do-It-Yourself Mac Projects?
Well, I had a lot of fun working with Jolie. First off, we worked remote. We never actually met in person. We spoke on the phone a little bit, but this was it. So we passed along ideas of which projects to take, and she, of course, gave me all the tough ones. But actually, the ones
she
that
admitted
I,
that.
Yeah, but the ones that I had the most fun with were the one, create your own radio broadcast. I thought that was just terrific because I actually had to learn how to do it. And I got a lot of help from the people that did Nicecast from Rogue Amoeba. They were great. They helped me out.
Right.
But also a lot of the fun things that I like to do, like control your Mac with your voice, things that have been with the Mac for a long, long time that people don't take advantage of. You can always control your Mac with your voice. I think since System 8 or 7 you could do that. But this one, people just don't know it. And so I do it. The thing is they've added – a little more personality to it. For instance, you can ask your Mac a joke and it'll give you a knock-knock joke. This is built in. So there's a lot of fun things, but also making a podcast, which is what you're doing, and I noticed that you're using GarageBand to do some part of your recording, and I show you how in that first book and in this book how to use GarageBand to help you make these podcasts. And that's a lot of fun because I think that's the future. In fact, right now I'm involved writing another book for McGraw-Hill about online video, how to do everything with online video. And
well, please let us see that one
as soon as it comes out. As soon as
Very good. And just we want to thank you so much, but kindly tell us a little bit about your website and what we're going to find when we go to shallot.com. That's S-H-A-L-A-T. www.tshallet.com. What do we find when we go there?
Well, you'll find links to these books, of course. You'll find examples of my portfolio, and it's not really a blog. It's just I keep people up to date. For instance, when I was speaking at Macworld Expo this past January, I put that up there so that people, if they do visit, would know where to find me. I do a 5-minute bit every week for another podcast, which is a radio show as well in San Francisco, called Inside Mac Radio. I'm sure people have heard of that. And so there are links to that. I give tips, graphic tips, and little tutorials very quickly on that. And if there is any material that needs to be up there after one of my bits, I put that on the website as well for downloads. And it's a way for you to find me, to read some of my stuff, and because I'm a designer, to hire me.
That's fine. Well, I'll be happy to hire you if your real design is as good as Mac Design Out of the Box by Andrew Shallet, and that's published by Inside Mac Press Peach Pit, or CNET Do-It-Yourself Mac Projects, published by McGraw-Hill. Thank you so much for joining us on the Book Bites Live podcast here at MyMac.com, and we can't wait to meet you in person next year at Macworld.
Thank you, John.
Thanks for downloading the MyMac.com podcast. You can subscribe to this podcast at our RSS feed at MyMac.com or by visiting the iTunes Music Store's podcast section. Please send all feedback to mymacpodcast@gmail.com. And thanks for listening to the MyMac.com podcast.